You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Hi, everybody. This is Ian for Radio TOH, and today we're talking with Ricky Rackman, who's an old friend to some of us, maybe somebody who's going to be a new friend to some of you who aren't familiar. But if I'm being honest, part of me has to remind myself that I did not actually go to school with Ricky Rackman. He's just somebody who was really prominent in my life, in most Gen X metalheads' lives during the time that the Headbangers Ball was on. So what's special, if you don't know why we're so excited about this, is Ricky Rackman was one of the best MTV VJs of all time, and definitely the best Headbangers Ball VJ.
I'll take that.
And the occasion for us talking is, one, Gimme Metal is going into the TV space, and two, Ricky Rackman is bringing the ball back through it. So, Ricky, tell us about it.
Well, first of all, it's kind of funny what you said, because, you know, I'm not a rock star. I'm not an athlete. I'm not, you know, any of these things, but like, people all know who I am from back then. So when people see me, sometimes they don't really remember how they see me. They're like, dude, how's it going? They think like they know me from high school. And I'm just telling you, I have the worst memory in the world. So whenever somebody says, dude, how are you doing? I'm like, hey, what's going on? And then, hey, how have you been? And they're like, what? You know? So it's kind of funny, but it still is flattering, because I'm not any of like some, I'm not an actor or a rock star, but people like all know me, and sometimes they don't put two and two together. But anyways, it's really fun to be doing this show. This show is done purely for the love of doing it. You know, it's not a money thing. It's a very low budget thing, but it's a thing that's needed. And it's a thing that works. And the people at Gimme Metal are so cool for giving me total freedom to do whatever I want. We'll see how long they let me do whatever I want, but I'm having a good time.
So this is new for Gimme Metal. I think lots of listeners will be familiar with them as a music streaming service, but the video aspect is new.
Oh yeah. What happened was, I was in a NASCAR race and there was a Megadeth car, and I was like, oh my God, Megadeth is on a car. That's so rad. And then it said Gimme Radio. And I'm like, what the hell is Gimme Radio? So I looked into it, and then I looked into the Gimme Metal app, and I was like, this is kind of cool. And then I saw Gimme Metal TV Beta, and I was like, oh, they're going to start a TV station. They're going to start a TV network. I have an idea. So I wrote them a letter. I'm like, hi, I'm Ricky Rackman. I used to do a show called Headbangers Ball. Do you want to do something?
No.
They're like, yes. I'm like, okay, here's the rules. I play whatever I want to play. I say whatever I want to say. I send the segments to you and you play them. And they're like, sounds great. That's how it worked.
That's incredible. So to be clear, there's no connection to MTV Viacom networks here.
Oh, hell no. No, nothing at all. Zero. Zip. The ball, if they can, they're not going to, I don't think MTV is going to, unless the show was called My Teen Pregnant Ball, I don't think they're going to really care. I'm like the stepchild of MTV. Nobody cares about what Ricky Rackman's doing.
Abandoned, a classic Gen X latchkey kid, just left home alone. And now what are you going to do with his ball?
They didn't even let me go back into the house one more time to say goodbye. They just canceled my show. I never did a farewell episode or nothing. And well, I'll show them, even though they don't care.
No, but so I'm interested in your new creative freedom. I don't want to spend too much time rehashing the past, but that's sort of what old guys do when they get together. I would like to hear more about how the curation and acquisition of content went when you were with MTV compared to what's going on now. It's, you know, I imagine you really didn't have much of a role in choosing what was going to be showing up on MTV at all.
Yeah, this is the easiest way to say it. On MTV, I got zero say in videos that played. On the ball, I get 100%, okay? So it's the only thing that sometimes you know, I'll say, I want to play an Iron Maiden video. And then they'll look and they're like, there really aren't any Iron Maiden videos and we couldn't get any clear. You know, sometimes labels aren't so willing to let us play the videos if we're not going to pay them, and we're not going to pay them. And they don't know what this whole thing is. They don't realize that we're actually turning people on to bands that, might not have gotten the exposure. But I make pretty much, I make a list of the videos that I want to play. I give it to the ball and I give it to Gimme Metal. And they're like, okay, yeah, this is it. Which I think is really interesting because it was so great to read reviews of the ball before the show even aired. You know, people are so brutal on message boards and or on everything online. They're just, people are just freaking lame. And I get the butt of a lot of it. So, you know, I'm reading reviews on the ball. Oh, yeah. How many people want to see a bunch of hair metal bands with a bunch of guys dressed up in makeup and all these ballads? I'm like, dude, the show never aired. Okay. And you're reviewing, the show has never been on the air. And everybody had their preconceptions, but nobody knows what, and it doesn't matter. Whatever I do, I'm going to lose with this group of people who I give a rat's ass about. I mean, the thing is, if I decide, you know what, this is going to be great. And people are like, yeah, man, I know you're going to be playing, you know, Warrant and Winger and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So meanwhile, I'm like, okay, I want to play this one from Obituary, this one from Carcass, this one from Spirit Box, this one, here's my list. And so then those people are like, oh, now you're playing death metal because it's trendy, even though it's not trendy, you know? But I'll get those people that say, whatever I do, there are people that are going to hate it. And even your site, which calls me a real world-renowned poser or whatever, I truly,
that sounds like us, yeah.
I truly don't give a flying F because here's the bottom line. Here's the bottom line. I don't know what the hell a poser is. I think I know what a sellout is. I think I know what a sellout is. A sellout is somebody that trades in everything they believe for money. That is what a sellout is, okay? Cutting your hair is not a sellout. 95% of the people that gave me a hard time for cutting my hair are all now bald, so, okay? And I'm not. Cutting my hair was not a sellout move because everybody at MTV and everybody in the metal community told me not to cut my hair. So cutting my hair is a sellout move. Metallica sold out by cutting their hair. Guess what? Nobody wanted them to cut their hair. Okay. So the other thing, Ricky Rackman, he's all into grunge. Now he's wearing flannels. Well, big shocker, everybody. I'm a biker. I always have been. And when it's cold outside, I'll put on a flannel. And I still put on a flannel when I ride my motorcycle. Did I look silly in the 80s? Hell yes, I did. I have no problem with that. Do I still love LA Guns and Faster Pussycat? Yes. Did I grow up in the punk rock scene? Yes. I know a hell of a lot. I said this. And oh my God, I don't know why I said this or why I'm repeating it. But when I was a kid, I knew more about Black Flag than Black Sabbath, which of course got people mad at me. But people loved to get mad at Ricky Rackman. And the truth is, I don't give a F right now because this poser sellout who created the Cat House in 1986 is now doing a show playing metal. If you think I'm doing this show to get famous, you're wrong. If you think I'm doing this show to get money, you couldn't be more wrong, because the truth is I'm losing money from my other jobs, which I have many, to do the show The Ball, which I want to do because I want to play this stuff. So the haters are going to hate. I really don't care anymore. You know, I go on a Monsters of Rock cruise where they pay me to show up, and all I do is get hell from all these people that are like, dude, don't you know that Dokken would sell way more tickets than any of those grunge bands you liked? I'm like, okay, well, so those grunge bands I liked were Soundgarden, right? Or Alice in Chains or Pearl Jam, which, by the way, I don't ever use the word grunge. I don't use the word hair metal. I don't really even use the word in the different genres of metal between black metal and death metal. I listen to rock, like Lemmy said, it's all rock and roll. But I've always been the butt end of a joke, and these people don't know me, but have I changed since 1986? I most definitely have. And yeah, I did have short hair. And yes, I will put on an ELO record now and then. I don't give a rat's ass because I'm having the best time of my life. And I'm doing quite well. You know, I read the last thing. It's like, oh, Ricky's doing the ball. That's a really good thing because he works at Home Depot. I was like, okay, well, first of all, there's nothing wrong with working at Home Depot. And in the year 2000, I lost my job for beating a guy up and I went to jail and I ended up getting a job as a car salesman. And as far as I'm concerned, having a real job is admirable. In the past 10 years, I'm doing financially better than I've ever done in my whole life. I don't flaunt it, but I'm not working at Home Depot and there's nothing wrong with it. But for the people that want to give me a hard time, you go right ahead and you do that, okay?
Yeah, I think that there's sort of no winning for anybody who showed up on MTV, especially back then when they were trying to acquire subcultural properties. And, you know, anyone who is the face of that is going to catch a lot of flack from the associated scenes.
But you know what? I am winning now. I mean, now that I look at things, it's like I won. It's like, you know, 5 miles from here, there's two office buildings and all they do is sell cat house shirts worldwide. And I own 100% of that company. I do a show called The Ball that people love all over the world, even though it's on three things. I have radio. I have podcasts. I'm living in a beautiful house. I've got the raddest girlfriend in the world that also happens to be the best tattoo artist in the world. I mean, I'm freaking doing okay. So if some guy that's sitting there that's pissed off about something that I did in 1991, believe me, buddy, I really don't care.
Well, and for some of us, we remember when it was, you know, Adam Curry doing it. Like, I mean, if you want to get mad about something, let's go get mad about that.
You know what Adam Curry ended up doing, right?
Podcasting.
Well, kind of created podcasting.
Yeah.
Right? That's his claim. I don't think Adam Curry is worried about what anybody's saying about Adam Curry either. He's doing quite well. But he was the first one to tell you he put on the leather jacket and was the metal guy. I'm also the first one to tell you that when I first went on MTV, I was horrible. I watched my videos. I would punch me because I didn't come from a TV radio background. I mean, you've got these guys like, you know, Jose and Eddie Trunk, who are all great.
They're great. And Adam too.
But those guys are all broadcasting majors.
So wait, let's back up. Did they do any sort of onboard training for you? Or are they like, this guy seems to be from the LA scene.
No, this is on TV. No. My first day on TV was on MTV.
They didn't do a test or?
Oh, no, they did a test. But I wouldn't have got the job if I didn't walk into the room with Axel.
So your on-camera test, you bring Axl Rose in there with you.
Axl set up the audition. He stayed in the hotel. He set up the audition. I flew to New York with Axl. And is it a job that it's who you know? Yep. Yep. It was. I walk into the biggest rock star in the world. Did it help me get my job? Yep. How do I feel about that? I live in a nice house. Then I think it's all because of what everything started back in 1990.
Did you know you were applying for a job or was it like, hey, on the way home, let's just drop in over
no,
here?
No. Because we lived in Hollywood and MTV was in New York. And it was sort of like, I mean, there's an episode of Headbangers Ball with Kevin Seal hosting where Faster Pussycat was the guest. And Tammy says on the show, hey, want to say hey to my buddy, Ricky. He probably digs hearing his name on MTV. You know, it's like, and then I think I mentioned to Axel, I'd like to host Headbangers Ball because you got to understand all my friends are starting bands. They're all making millions of dollars. I run the cat house, but I'd like to get that. And, you know, I don't have the music talent as everybody else. So in comes the MTV thing. And I loved it.
I mean, the first association when you say Ricky Rackman's doing something, your brain is going to L.A., Hollywood, glam, 80s.
I live in North Carolina, by the way. I don't even live in L.A. anymore. I live in North Carolina.
But, you know, that's the brand you built, and that's, you know, and that is what it is, right?
Love it.
So, and I love a bunch of that. And for a minute, I was like, fuck, yes, Faster Pussycat. And then I thought, but wait. If you're doing more current music, you know, I saw recently you've got the new Cannibal Corpse, you've got the new Fear Factory. I don't know who the new Faster Pussycat is. What, Steel Panther? Like, how would you even return to hyping that sort of metal? I'm not even sure it's I could be totally wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. If there's a huge
I'm not doing there. The Cat House show. I'm not doing the Headbangers Ball. I'm doing a show called The Ball. In my opinion, I think The Ball needs to be heavy. I think it needs to be brutal. I think we need to honor the old and embrace the new. There has never been one of those bands on The Ball. However, in the third episode, I am going to play a Faster Pussycat video that most people have never seen because Tammy is my brother. He's got new music and I think it's good. But, you know, it's so funny. It's like people are like, dude, Headbangers Ball. Like I was reading an interview with Corpse Grinder from Cannibal Corpse. And they were talking about the Headbangers Ball and talking about, and there were bands. I don't know if Nelson was ever played on Headbangers Ball, but it might have been.
Maybe.
There was a lot of crap played on the show. I'm the first one to say it. But there was also a lot of good stuff. Like I'm watching because the thing is I never watch a show. So I'm sitting here and I'm watching this promo and I'm like, and coming up, we've got something from Death and the Cro-Mags and Obituary. I'm like, wait a minute. That's not all Warrant and Poison and all that other stuff. It's like, we mixed it up because we had to. And you know what? I think that any band that was played during the daytime on the radio shouldn't have been played on Headbangers Ball. But do I think we still should have played Skid Row, Slave to the Ground? Fuck yeah, we should have. You know, there's a lot of stuff we should have played because we were trying to get as many people as we can. I will be honest with you. If I wanted the biggest show in metal, I would do like the metal show does and plays, you know, a lot of stuff like Y&T and then play something from Metallica and then play something from, you know, whatever. And that's great. And that show, he's great. He's great at what he does. There's no ill will, but I'm not doing that. The reason I don't ever say a heavy metal show is because there was a show called The Metal Show. And this show is nothing like that. This show is heavy. This show is brutal. And, you know, I'm looking at the list of videos that I'm playing on this Saturday show. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to be playing Slayer and I'm going to be playing Danzig. And I'm going to be playing Anthrax, but I'm also playing Refused because that band never got any credit in my opinion. And Leah picked Crypta, which is a all girl metal band from freaking Brazil, and Cannibal Corpse and Every Time I Die and Red Fang and, you know, stuff like that. It's like, I want to play. If I wanted a show that the million people are going to watch, I would do the Headbangers Ball, but I'm not. I'm doing a show that's brutal. And this is how it works. Hey, Mark Morton, would you want to be on my show, The Ball? And I'll interview you in the morning. Okay. Bam. Saturday, Mark Morton's on the show. We've had Will Carroll of Death Angel, Zetro from Exodus, Mark Morton from Lamb of God, Jamie from Code Orange, which I'm running out of friends, so I don't know who's going to be on it pretty soon.
We'll hype this interview and see if we can get you some more friends.
Or I'll lose some more. I don't care. But the thing is, that's the way the show goes, you know? And people that used to say on Headbangers Ball, Ricky would get so excited. Oh, this is my favorite band. This is my favorite band. Because when there was a video that I really liked, I made sure everybody knew I liked that one. Well, if that bugged you about the Headbangers, you're going to hate this more because I got news for you. I'm looking at my list of videos and I'm like, fuck yeah. Yeah, I love that song. I love that song. So if I'm going to go into something from Every Time I Die, I'm not going to go in. Here's the latest from Keith Buckley and anyone with Every Time I Die. I'm going to say like, fuck, this band is so rad. And Andy is also the Butcher in AEW. And I'm going to have fun. If people don't like that I'm like that, I don't care because this is the way I truly am. There is no cue cards. I try to shoot the starting in this like old, like Blair Witch type atmosphere at the starting because it's in my backyard and my phone has a black and white feature on it.
So what's the process from here? You've got the playlist and then you have to acquire the licenses somehow. So they, that then goes. So they do that. If there's a problem with the licenses, it comes back. I mean,
writing down a bunch of list of videos, and then they say, okay, we can't play that, we can't play that. I'm like, okay, can we play that? And they're like, oh, well, we played that one last week. And I was like, hey, I really like this band from New Zealand that was really big, that wasn't big, but they came out 2 years ago, but they're new to everybody else. Let's play Alien Weaponry. So we play them, and everybody's like, oh, my God, this band's great. And then I sit there and Leah and myself wake up in the mornings and we'll find a band that we like, and then we'll go on Spotify and say, play bands that sound like, and she's searching for video. I mean, that's a cool thing. It's not like John Lennon and Yoko Ono and me just putting my chick in everything. It's like Leah is a big part of helping me find these videos. And we both like this kind of brutal music, which is just fun. And I'm having fun doing it. You know, maybe one day I'll do another show that's about Cat House and those bands. But, you know, it's not like I'm, you know, if you watch, I don't know, The Walking Dead, and you don't say, you know what, I really love NASCAR. Why aren't you guys putting NASCAR in The Walking Dead? Okay, well, it's The Walking Dead. That doesn't mean that I don't love a lot of mellower bands, because I really, really do. But the ball isn't that show. The ball is heavy.
So on one hand, I really hear you, it's all rock and roll, like Lemmy says. But on the other hand, you know, you're not going to put NASCAR in The Walking Dead. So I don't know how to ask this as a hypothetical. So I imagine on a show like yours, maybe baby metal would be on, though it's not really traditional metal, or maybe Poppy would get on there.
Those are okay.
Okay.
That's a good example, because I had that discussion with.
Oh, all right. Friend. Let's hear about that.
Okay. Well, then I'll ask you this, and we will have this discussion together.
Yeah. All right.
The new one from Ghostmane. Are you familiar with Ghostmane?
I am. And I was going to ask you about the new one from Lil Nas X.
No.
No, the reason why I was going to ask, because it's a hip hop track.
Because you have a devil and it doesn't make
right,
you
that's,
metal.
Right. That's the thing. So, okay. So that's going to be on one side of the line.
No. Baby metal. I like that song, Chocolate. I think it's funny. I think if you translated their lyrics, they probably would say, please, somebody help me. I'm locked up. They only feed me bread. I'm a prisoner. Poppy, I don't buy it. I just don't. That's not to say it's not bad. It's okay. Maybe I need to watch it. I don't think I'd play Poppy on the ball. But then there's that new song from Ghostmane, which to me is very Manson-y. And I don't know. Like it's a tough question. And the problem is I'm the one that decides. And I run stuff by my girlfriend and she's like, would you play this? Would you play this? I mean, it also goes down to the same thing. Like, would I play Five Finger Death Punch or Bring Me the Horizon?
Oh, really? There's a line for you there.
And Chris Cale is a very, very good friend of mine, but I don't play them on my show, and I don't play Bring Me the Horizon on my show. And I don't know if I do or not. I mean, I really, really don't know. I mean, I guess if I wanted a bigger audience, I would. And that's not to say that there's anything wrong with Five Finger Death Punch at all. It's just, I feel that their music is played on all the mainstream rock and roll stations. And I really hope that if Chris Cale sees this interview, he doesn't take offense to that, because let's be honest, if Five Finger Death Punch sold 2,000 records, we'd probably be playing them all the time, you know? And I know that sounds so mean, you know, I have a quandary whether I play Danko Jones or not, because I really like Danko Jones and he's down for the cause. And I think I do. But, you know, right now I'm on show three. I've got a couple more shows left. If the show stays around longer and I continue to do it, then maybe I bring in some of those bands and make the show longer. But, you know, if I'm only given a dozen videos, I'm going to play something that's old you haven't seen for a while and play something new. You know, yes, I think there's probably more fans that would like me to play something from, I don't know, one of the new popular bands, but I decided to play something that might not be as popular, but is more core and more underground and a little bit more outlaw maybe, but it is tough. And I'm the one that picks the videos, you know, for me to play a Faster Pussycat video in this show is bold, because I have not played anything like that with the exception of Sunbomb, which is Tracy Guns with Michael Sweet of Stryper. Somebody said, will you play the song with Michael Sweet of Stryper? And my answer was, I don't like Stryper, but I like Tracy Guns. So then I listen to the song and I'm like, sounds pretty good. Sounds like old metal. So I played it and people loved it. you know? And I know that there's a lot of people that are of my generation that didn't know what to think of Spirit Box. And I played Holy Roller. And the next thing you know, they're like, oh my God, this record is brilliant. You know, and to know that I might've turned somebody my age into some new music, and that I might turn some kids onto some old school stuff like A Carcass or An Obituary, you know, that's pretty flattering.
I'm glad you mentioned younger people, because I had the opportunity to ask a couple dozen people in their late teens, early 20s, if they could ask a question of a classic MTV VJ, what would it be? And rather than getting any suggestions from them, I had to explain what an MTV VJ was for 20 minutes.
I did an interview that you can find on YouTube that was called, the kid is called the Jam Man. The Jam Man. And he is 9 years old. And sometimes the questions he would say, he would do stuff that is like, oh yeah, I'm talking to a 9 year old. I forget I'm talking to a 9 year old. But then he asks me questions like, he's sitting there and he's like, you know, is it harder now to get videos played? Because back then the labels would all give you videos. And now with licensing, I'm like, who are you? But he asked some great, and he was 9 years old. I got interviewed by a 13 year old, and there are kids that are watching the ball, you know? It would be like somebody going back to me in 86 and saying, man, the biggest artist is Bing Crosby. You got to check it out, because that is the time difference. We're talking the difference between now and the 80s is the same difference between the 80s and not 50s, the 40s. So we're not talking about Elvis Presley and Eddie Cochran. We're talking about Nat King Cole and Bing Crosby. So there is such a big age difference. But now, you know, I went to Slayer's very, very, very last show, and there were a lot of parents there going ballistic with their kids, you know, and that's something that's really cool, because, you know, your parents are very influential in the music that you listen to. My dad didn't like metal, but, you know, I discovered that on my own.
Yeah. One of my favorite live videos is just like this one shot from the crowd of Satyricon playing live. It's one of those big Euro festivals. And as it pans back through this crowd that's going mental, in the back, there's just a dad with his daughter on his shoulders, and they're just jumping up and down to Satyricon. And it's like, yeah, I mean, this is the thing that people don't understand about metal culture when you're really in it, is that it's not, with all due respect, it's not all at the cat house, right? There's a lot else that's going on in people's lives. And I think we're really starting to see a lot more of that as metalheads get older and start representing themselves in different ways. So
I'm really excited. You mentioned this. The beauty of the ball being doing very well internationally is that I'm hoping that, I'm not going to convince anybody, if you don't like me, don't like me, but I'm hoping people see that this is a genre that I like, that if I'm playing something from a certain heavy band, it's because, you know, I really like it. If I'm using Municipal Waste as my theme music, it's because I personally picked Municipal Waste because I think that band is really fun. And I'll be the first to say, I was not that much into Amon Amarth. And then I started watching the videos, and I was like, and I think there's three different types of people that see Amon Amarth. I think there's people that think it's the goofiest thing they've ever seen. They just don't get it. There's other people that go to Amon Amarth and sit in the audience, and they go like this, like they're rowing a ship, and that wear Viking hats. And then there's other people that sit there and watch us and go, oh my God, these guys are slaying a dragon on stage, and their drum kit is in a Viking ship. This is so silly and so awesome. And that's what I am. And now I'm that person that's like, you know, the Ricky of whatever's cool, and the Ricky of like, dude, they're fucking slaying dragons. That's so badass. And now I love it. So I'm hoping that the international appeal of the ball really kicks in, so I can go to Wacken, and I can go to Hellfest, and I can go to all these European metal festivals, especially Hellfest, because my girlfriend speaks French.
Right on. You know, this is amazing about metal, is that outside of the US, it's normal people's music. It's not as niche as it is in the US. And there are globally massive bands, I think like Moonspell, You know, you say that to even an American metal fan. They're like, maybe I've heard of Moonspell. I don't know. But, you know, this is a like Metallica level act just somewhere else. And it's not for underground kids.
We were in France and we went to a restaurant that was a meat house. They sell meat, big slabs of red meat. And they play death metal in there. I mean, the heaviest stuff. And I went in there and I'm like, hey, nobody recognized me at all, which made me feel bad. But I was like, hey, you know,
maybe no free steak that day.
Nothing that day. Nobody knew who I was. But we went in there and there, I mean, it's just like all the, like, you know, the heaviest of, you know, and they're just, you know, you're sitting here and people are sitting down listening to Behemoth and Mon Amarth and Cannibal Corpse. And there's people in shirts and ties cutting their steak, listening to it. And it's all devil looking. I'm like, this is so awesome. And I loved it. And it's exactly what you said, that the people are into, you know, that it's acceptable, that type of music. And I believe that genre hopefully will even grow bigger and bigger and bigger, which will be wonderful, because then everybody can just say that I'm trendy and jumping on a trend.
You sort of are the sacrificial lamb for that. You're sort of the sacrificial lamb of the US scene, I feel.
I don't care. I don't care anymore. It's like, I listen to whatever I listen to. Here's the deal, okay? Let's pick a band like Red Fang, for instance, okay? Red Fang is funny. Red Fang is stoner rock. And, you know, this is a bad example. I should probably pick I'll say Crypta. Let's say Crypta. Crypta is a band from Brazil. The girls were in Nervosa and I think Burning Witches. Okay. They're so heavy. Got news for you people. They would like it if more fans liked them. Okay. They really love being underground, but they would love to have more fans. If we play a Crypta video on The Ball and people like them and buy records, that's a good thing for the band. That's a good thing for the scene. So if all of a sudden that happens and then I get criticized for that, it's like, you guys don't understand. Whether I am a full-fledged member of the death metal scene, which I'm the first person to say that, even though I listen, I'm not very knowledgeable in a lot of these different genres of rock. But I play it because I believe it's important. And I play it because I think that if I play something from Arch Enemy, it's because that even though that band is very popular, there might be people that don't know Arch Enemy. And there might be people, and you think like everybody knows Ginger, but guess what? Not everybody does know who Ginger is. And not everybody knows who Gojira is. So if I can, most people do, but if I can play bands like that and get them a bigger audience, that's going to keep the scene alive. It's not going to kill the scene. So if anything, me on a show playing the brand new Cannibal Corpse video, if that makes all those fans mad, fuck Ricky Ray. It's like, don't you guys understand? You might not like me, but my show is out actually trying to help all of these scenes, even though they would do just fine without me. But if all of a sudden more people are buying the Cannibal Corpse record because of me, you know, that's a good thing, whether the band hates me or not.
And the scene is global now. It's really, really different from what it was back in the 80s and 90s at that. So one thing that, something that I would enjoy in a show, I don't know if you have plans for doing this, is somebody sent me links to a bunch of Chinese metal. Earlier, somebody sent me a bunch of links to Vedic metal, this sort of Indian metal. It's amazing, never be able to search for it. I wouldn't come across this stuff normally. And I think that people would go bonkers if they heard this Chinese and Indian stuff.
We do a segment in The Ball called Where the F is Leah Vendetta? And she's in a new country all the time playing a band from that country. And one of the bands that I think we're doing in the next episode is Bloodywood from India. So the thing is, yes, I'm going to be playing bands from other countries, even though Crypta they're representing Brazil. And before that we did, you know, Mon Amarth, and we'll do different bands from different areas and show all of this stuff worldwide. And if everybody's like, why isn't it archived? Why isn't it on YouTube? This is why. Because if all of a sudden I play a video from Crypta and you are not into Crypta, you might hit fast forward. Well, guess what? You can't on our show. It's on at this time and this time only. So you're going to sit here. If you're waiting for a video from Testament and Crypta comes on, you're going to sit there and you're going to watch it and you're going to go like, that's kind of all right. I like that. So you might get exposed to new stuff.
And so there's an interactive component on the user's side.
Oh, the chat room is awesome. I mean, that's one of the reasons the show is on Saturdays at 9 p.m. East, 6 p.m. West. But now we're re-airing it on Friday at 10 a.m. West Coast, which is also like 6 or 7 o'clock in Denmark. So now on Fridays, it's on at nighttime for everybody overseas. So that works. That works really good. So now, got news for all you people. I'm going to have the biggest show in the planet because everybody's watching this show.
Now, I've got another question, not to drag you back to talking about glam metal at all, but I think part of why I'm happy to talk to you is I like it. I would love for there to be a new Def Leppard. I would love for there to be, you know, a new Bullet Boys. But when I go to listen for what I feel like I get is Steel Panther. You know what I'm going with this?
There's
going
to be a new Faster Pussycat coming out in May.
And that would be great, but where's, you know, 20-year-olds in a Faster Pussycat style band? Do you think
here's my take, okay? Here's the biggest mistake Faster Pussycat made. Faster Pussycat shouldn't have been touring with Enough's Enough. Faster Pussycat shouldn't be touring with Mr. Big. Faster Pussycat should have been the first band on a show with Avenged Sevenfold. Because Faster Pussycat, I think, has got a great look. I think they're really, really good. I think the band is good. I mean, there's bands like Faster Pussycat and LA Guns that I think are freaking great. I think those are just great, great bands. I still listen to the Choir Boys because they sound like Faces. They're not going to be on the ball. That's not to say that LA Guns or Faster Pussycat wouldn't be on the ball. But, you know, I probably wouldn't play Poison on the ball. But that's not to say that I wouldn't one day do a show called It Came from the Cat House, when I would play Faster Pussycat, LA Guns, Junkyard, Hanoi Rocks, all those great bands. And yes, I do say great bands. I'm not turning my back on that scene.
I think, not to interrupt, but I'm wondering, is there even a scene there?
They're horrible people. They're horrible people. Those people hate me. Those websites like the Metal Sludges and those people despise me. I'm like, look, you 70-year-old fat, lonely motherfucker, okay? You can yell at me for not playing the latest video from insert band here. First of all, you know, while the Cat House was this lovely glam band, nobody ever mentioned that we had Exodus and Megadeth and Suicidal Tendencies and Corrosion of Conformity. And when Body Count was banned, we had them play the Cat House. It's, you know, that genre is the most bitter people in the world. And when I do gigs I don't even do those gigs anymore. And I'll still show up at the shows because I like the support. Like, I'll throw on a Bang Tango record once in a while because I think it's good. You know, and it's not that I turned my back on the Cat House scene. It's like the scene is kind of dead. But it's like, I remember being at the Cat House when Slash and Del said, we're going because we're going to go see Slayer at the Palladium. You know, it's just, I mean, now I'm playing what I like to play. Do I still listen to that music? Yes, but it's not the ball. If I did a show called, I would love to do a show about the Cat House era. I have a podcast called the Cat House Hollywood Podcast. That's all I talk about. I can't wait to go see Guns N' Roses, but this is the ball.
Yeah, I think as far as like today's prospects for there being, you know, a new kid that picks up a guitar and wants to be Blackie Lawless, it looks to me like a kind of metal masculinity that doesn't make sense to young people. Like, why would I want to do that? I don't. And here I'm kind of getting at, also, you discover sobriety through all of this. You sort of came in an eager participant in a kind of identity and a kind of masculinity that it is really typical of metal. And then even you lost interest in that, it seems. And I think that today's young people are looking at, you know, Motley Crue strippers and drowning in whiskey and are thinking, I just don't understand being that sort of man.
Sure was fun though. It was a lot of fun. I don't like to say cancel culture and it's so politically incorrect, but it is. And I do miss rock stars. I do miss backstage parties. I do miss that stuff. And now if you have those same bands doing it, it looks kind of stupid, but we don't know what a band like Dirty Honey does backstage. You know, I mean, these are bands that do have that feel, but you know, a lot of that stuff is dated. But like, I'll go see Jackal whenever Jackal plays, because Jackal always makes me smile.
As long as they bring out that chainsaw.
Well, then you know they're going to bring on that.
I wouldn't show up if they did.
They always have to bring on the chainsaw. And Jesse is one hell of a great front man. And who's to say one day I don't throw that in? I just not now. I've only done 3 shows, so I don't have to play that stuff now. I like to keep it heavy and I like to keep it brutal. And there's so many great bands from the 80s that played heavy music.
We seem to not have many rock stars these days, like you're saying.
No, we really don't. And I think about that sometimes, like, who are the rock stars? I mean, in my opinion, the biggest rock star would be Dave Grohl, who's so anti being a rock star. He's so like, I'm just like a regular dude, you know? I mean, that's the biggest rock band in the world. But we don't have the, when I say glamorous, I don't mean glam. We don't have the glamorous, crazy rock star attitudes, because you know who's got them? Rappers. The rappers have got the expensive cars and all the girls in the videos and the porn, the booze. The rappers all got that. There's no bands that have that. And I don't know what would happen if they did that. And you're right. It's like, well, yeah, Steel Panther does it, but it's kind of it's a satire, you know?
It absolutely is. Yeah, I can't imagine doing it seriously and being taken seriously at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
Well, what do you think we lost with that? I know it's sort of impossible to say. What do we lose?
I think we just, there's no mystery anymore. There's no danger. Everything's safe. Everything you can have is right here. The thing is, people used to go out. People used to go out. They'd go to the whiskey to see a band. And then if there wasn't a band playing, they might still go to the whiskey. You know, nobody's going out supporting live music like they used to. You know, I'll go, if there's a band playing, I'd like to go early and see the opening band, especially if it's somebody I'd never heard of. And people are lazy. They don't want to support a scene anymore. And that's a shame. People don't want to get out there. And now when we get, but you know what, who knows, maybe this pandemic flushed the system. And maybe when bands start playing, we're going to be going crazy. I'll tell you, I cannot wait to go to a show. And if you think when I go to a show, I'm going to be standing on the stage, you are widely mistaken. I'm going to be out there, not in the pit because I'm fragile, but I will be out there watching it, screaming and yelling like everybody else.
From a comfortable chair. A safe distance away.
And hopefully they go on around not too much later than 9.
Oh, don't even get me started. I would kill for brunch concerts. That would be amazing at this point. You know, one thing that you mentioned about supporting scenes and all of this, something that we've discussed quite a bit on the Toilet of Hell is pay-to-play booking schemes. And I know that you've sort of got a hand in venues and stuff. Do you know what I mean by ticket selling schemes? You know.
Oh my God, do I ever?
Could you speak to your opinion on that?
Yes, we did it once at the Cat House. In all of history, we did it one time. What happens is you've got a venue and the promoters don't want to lose money. So the promoters will take stupid bands and say, look, here's 100 tickets. You sell them for $10 each and you can keep the money. So buy the 100 tickets from us. So then these bands pay all that money to buy all those tickets, thinking they're going to go out and sell them, but they're just going to give them to people to get them to go to the show. And then the promoters break even before the doors even open. So what you have is sometimes a lot of crap bands. The only band to ever pay to play the Cat House was Pete Angelus managed David Lee Roth. And Pete Angelus says, "Hey, I'm working with this band from Atlanta. Will you let them play the Cat House?" And I go, "Well, if I let them play the Cat House, we get David Lee Roth to play." He's like, "I don't know about that. I'll work." And he goes, "Look, I'll tell you what. What if I buy $400 worth of tickets? I'll give the tickets out and then we'll just put them on early." I'm like, "Well, let me hear him." So I listen. I'm like, "This band's really good." I go, "Okay." And so they bought 100 tickets, right? And they gave them all out and the people all went in. And that night, from what I understand, that night, everybody really enjoyed the Black Crowes.
Wild. So the Black Crowes got a pay-to-play spot at the Cat House.
I guess that's pay-to-play, right?
That's pay-to-play.
Yeah, they pay-to-play. But it's not like I would have said, "You have to pay me to play." I forgot, I wouldn't let them play for free. I thought that record was so good. But it was just, that's kind of how that worked.
But after that, you opted out. That was just the one time. Was it a decision you ever had to make at the managerial level? Like, you know, what guys were never going to.
Because people didn't care who played the Cat House. We'd have no bands play and the place was capacity. So that's why I can have, you know, a band play. I mean, I had another club called Bordello and we never had bands play and it was packed every single night. And then, but we had a VIP room. And then the only night we ever had a band play there, my friend wanted to play the blues and he sat in the back room and he played the blues with a bottle of wine. It was Glenn Danzig. So the Cat House and Bordello, I didn't have to do pay to play because the same amount of people are going to go through the door no matter what's going on. So instead I can have Alice in Chains can bring their friend's band, Mookie Blaylock, who ended up becoming Pearl Jam. And that's who I can have all these great bands play because, you know, the club's going to be crowded. I don't need to sell tickets to make sure people are going to be there. And yeah. I always hated that because promoters are in it for the money. That's it. You know, I wanted to do a Cat House. This is the Cat House 35th anniversary. And I wanted to do a 35th anniversary show, but all the bands want so much money and I can't charge such a ridiculous fee to get in. So I'm like, scrap it for now.
Yeah, it's a world of guarantees for all those touring bands. I mean, I think a lot of fans don't really understand how a lot of their favorite touring bands night after night show up in random cities to places where the room's bought out, but nobody's in there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a shame. It's a shame, but maybe things will change after the pandemic. I don't know.
Well, something's definitely going to change. It's not all going to come back the same whatsoever.
Before, I used to look at shows that I could drive to. When the shows start and it's safe to go to shows, I'm cashing a lot of frequent flyer miles. You know, I talked to Mark Morton from Lamb of God, who's going to be touring with Megadeth. I'm like, okay, well, if I'm working this week, when's this week? Oh, you're in Georgia? Okay. Oh, here's your new, oh, maybe big. You know, I remember when I saw Iron Maiden and I had so much fun. I went and saw him in Charlotte and then I saw him 2 weeks later in Vegas. It's like, I'll fly to go see a show.
And you can, so what's your day-to-day? I mean, pre-pandemic, what's the day-to-day like for you when you're doing all of these different things? Maybe you got to.
I also have a nationally, for a living, I have a nationally syndicated radio show called Racing Rocks. It's been on 20 years. It plays classic rock or mainstream rock. And I talk about racing. That show is on once a week. I've done it for 20 years. I have an apparel company and I also have the Cat House Hollywood podcast. I have the Triple R podcast and the apparel company keeps me busy, but nothing has been taking up more time right now than the ball because like I've got to edit videos all night tonight, just trying to send them these clips and I don't know what I'm doing. So that's taking up all my time right now. And I have not had 3 hours off in 3 months. I haven't had any time off at all. I had time off to go buy a new motorcycle, which is an old one. But
in a different parallel timeline, I recently got into F1, and I would love to talk to you about F1 racing. And
anything, every other type of racing. I forgot. I work for American Flat Track, so the flat track races. So at every race people go to around America, I'm the voice. I'm the voice for American Flat Track, and I'm the hype man, and I'm the one that gets people hyped about American Flat Track racing, which is such a great job. So I work every single day, all the time.
Yeah, there's no rock and roll in F1, and that's for sure.
Here's the craziest thing. I'm actually friends, which is of the people that you would never believe would be my friends. I used to play hockey with this guy, right? And we used to have these pickup hockey games. And my friend was starting a marketing group. And he's like, "Hey, I'm going to start selling advertising for sponsors in auto racing. He goes, I'm going to try this in Brazil. So he raced this car in Brazil and he put on the side of the car. I really do need to write a book because this story is unbelievable. He put on the side of his car, Rackman Entertainment. Okay. And he drove in Brazil and he's going to try to send this to all these people and try to get people interested in sponsorship. Well, I kept in touch with him and now he is the CEO of McLaren.
No,
of the Western portion of freaking McLaren. He almost became the president of Formula One.
Are you still in touch?
Once in a while, I'll drop him a line.
That is an incredible, you do need to write a book, my man.
His name is Zach Brown. And he is legitimately this. If you look, he is not the CEO of West Coast Development. He is not in charge of it. He's the CEO of freaking McLaren. And I could send him an email and he'd write me right back.
Well, this has turned into a very different sort of podcast where now we'll just talk about racing stuff. I want to respect your time.
NASCAR guy. We'll put it this way. Look, right now we're in my home office. And if you look at my home office, look behind me in my home office. This is all racing stuff.
Oh, nicely done. Listeners, he's showing us a wall full of NASCAR memorabilia.
That's right. I forgot. Yeah,
this is all.
Okay, audio. Here. Ricky is now picking up his computer and turning it to the side. Behind him, he has a picture with Dale Earnhardt, a picture with Dale Earnhardt Jr., a picture with Richard Petty, Junior Johnson's autograph, and one of Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s uniforms that Ricky wore when he was on the pit crew for Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s car at the Daytona 500 in 2001, which was the race that Dale Earnhardt died in.
Oh, that's heavy.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, that really sucked. I have a three. He's now showing his three tattoo because he's a Dale Earnhardt fan.
Mm. What do they let you do when you walk into pit as a guest pit crew member? Do they let you do
anything? I'm a gas runner. I had a little wagon and I'd run the gas to fill the gas and I'd bring it back and I couldn't have been more proud.
Is it scary as hell to be that close? Every time I see the crew, I think this is bravery.
I've been working in NASCAR for a real long time. I've been doing a lot of stuff in NASCAR for a real long time.
So you just don't have any fear of those things whipping past you? You're not afraid anyone's going to lose control when they come in?
Yeah, think about it. I think more about it at flat track races. I'm standing here on the start finish line watching these guys and girl go by, 100 and something miles an hour. I'm like, I could so easily just get taken out by a bike right now.
Makes going to concerts seem a lot safer. Well, yes, exactly. As long as there's no pandemic, I suppose.
Right.
Well, I don't want to keep you on here all night, although I feel like I should let you know that our friends from high school, Ray and Ben, are doing great. I'm still in touch. They'll be glad to know I talked to you.
Tell them, hey, Ray and Ben.
Right on. Is there anything you want to say here in closing?
Yes. You can get my t-shirts at cathousehollywood.com and watch the ball on Saturday at 9:00 Eastern on the Gimme Metal app. And it's also re-airs Fridays at 1:00 Eastern in the daytime, I think, something like that. Just get the Gimme Metal app. It's so easy and the ball is free.
Oh, fantastic. Can't be free.
Yes.
Well, maybe I'll cash up with you over there on the chat and I'll start begging you to play some Bang Tango.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to happen on this episode of the ball, but... You never know. You never know. It could happen.
Right on, buddy. Well, it's really nice to see you. I haven't seen you since the 90s.
Thanks.
We used to party a lot. It was great. You were always on the TV. And so it's really special to have you here one-on-one. This has been a great time. I appreciate it.
Good. Thank you very much. I had a good time.
All right. Take it easy.
Okay. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.